Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yeah, just gone 8:42 Central African time, and I can tell you a lovely Nasheed break there. And we are joined by our very own Professor Andre Duvenager, and I can tell you he is there in Mosul, by far away from his beloved Potchefstroom, and he's from the Northwest Universities. Good morning, Prof, and tell me, how's Mosul by this morning?
Good morning, Shafat. Yes, Mosul Bay is always beautiful, but we had a lot of rain overnight, and it is beautiful at this point in time. We had a huge drought over here, but at the moment, it is beautiful.
Yeah, I can tell you, Prof, if you had that type of rain in Potchefstroom, then all your potholes will be like swimming pools, but there in Mosul Bay, you got your whole pavement, you got your whole water system working ship-shape, Prof.
Shafat, yeah, even where we are here at the Gulf Estate, I must tell you there are no load shedding. They have an arrangement here with, I think, Mosgas or one of these bigger systems to provide electricity. So we have constantly electricity, and when we get out of this Gulf Estate, we are seeing dark places, especially yesterday evening. So I think the rest of the country is probably scheduled 4, 5, or 6. But yeah, we are fine. But it emphasized something else, and that is the whole thing of self-determination. You need to organize for yourself, plan for yourself. That seems to be the way forward.
You know, Prof, just before you came on, we received some voice notes and clips from a Member of Parliament, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, reporting on Korea. And what he says, that racism, Prof, I couldn't believe it, is very rife in that country. That, you know, against people of African descent, they are very prejudiced. And also, you know, you notice that in Israel, too, those Ethiopian Jews are discriminated against. It seems as if racism is still a very big factor in the world today. Prof, how do you react?
Shafat, there's no doubt that many people try to associate racism with South Africa and with apartheid. But from the beginning, and we did that in studies already in the 1980s, it is clear that race, color, identity is playing a role in all politics and will always play a role in politics. It was very interesting when the war started between Ukraine and the Russians. There were also forms of discrimination against black people over there. Janusz Walusz is seen as a hero in Poland. So don't underestimate the levels of racism. And I'm picking it up in countries like Britain as well. I know it is very, very sensitive. But yes, Shafat, indeed, that is the case. And if you work with the whole theory of clash of civilizations, the concept of identity politics that are coming into our environment more and more, this will be more and more the case in South Africa. However, my big concern at the moment is that we in South Africa have a form of reverse discrimination, where on an institutional level, we are discriminating against minority groups. And you will also know that when we talk about minority groups, we are also talking about color, the people of color, and that is so-called non-black groups. And you will pick it up from the Julius Malemas, the Floyd Shivambus, the transformation groups, and so on. Just look at our legislation in South Africa. It is openly race-based. The best example of this is broad-based black economic empowerment, which is official law and applied by government. So the whole concept of race and identity is well and alive throughout the world.
Absolutely, Prof. And then you look at President Cyril Ramaphosa. He seemed unfazed by the Parler controversy as he travels around Khayelitsha, Philippi, and Hanover Park for the ANC's renewal campaign. And Prof, he was treated like a celebrity and seemed to be amongst friends, even though pressure has been mounting over his leadership and the Parler controversy. What is Cyril Ramaphosa having to keep him in this world of make-believe, Prof?
Well, Shafat, it was an interesting 2 weeks in South African politics, probably the most interesting of the whole year. And I can assure you from what I picked up in the media and other sources, Ramaphosa was not only at the point of resigning, but in fact, some people said he already did resign. We know he prepared a speech to announce his resignation. And there was a huge turnaround. And it seems as if a lot of people played a role in that. His loyalists, I think there was corporate groups involved. There were international actors. I think we can expect the security environment to play a role. And I think at the end of the day, Shafat, it was probably better to have him there in the position at the moment, then we have someone else. Because I think, according to ANC succession, the man to take over would have been David Mabuza. And that will be extremely problematic. You will find at the moment, I think, there are huge things going on against Mabuza. I have read articles saying, as a result of certain misconduct, he may end up to 15 years in jail. But so I think the developments in a way is positive. But, you know, he's like a heavyweight boxer who took a huge knock. And he's standing up. I think he is not very steady on his feet at the moment, but at least he is continuing. And I think by the day, what I am picking up, is that he's becoming stronger. I think 2 weeks ago, it was really a 50-50 scenario. I think at the moment, and that's only my assessment, it's closer to 60-40. And I think there's a chance that he will win the presidential campaign, and he will be probably appointed president of South Africa for a second term. That is not to say that the battle is not going to stop against him. I believe it to continue, but I think he will be in a position to survive. And what is important, I think the Parler thing is not going to have that impact. And hopefully he will continue on his way with the Zondo report and implement the findings of the Zondo support. I understand that Zondo made a presentation a day or two back. I received some reports in this regard. And the Zondo spelled out the rules of the game in a way that will concern many people within the ANC. My only hope is that Ramaphosa won't end up as a lame duck president. And my honest hope is that he will follow a reform agenda, take the ANC really on the road of renewal, and the renewal is not what I'm seeing as reverse discrimination. It's opening up opportunities for South Africans to define themselves in their own ways and to contribute in their own way to the common good. I think that is our solution, and we need to facilitate such a process.
Yes, Prof, we also see that Xi Jinping arrived in Riyadh for the China-Arab summit, and it seems as if the Saudis are going to be part of the BRICS. Will this be a big game changer, and how would it affect the Americans, Prof?
Well, you know, historically, and I'm the specialist in that field, but historically there were good relations between the Saudis and the Americans, especially in the war between the U.S. and Iran about nuclear power stations and all of this. But at the moment, I think it can be a big climate change. Not so much that Saudi Arabia is a big role player in world politics. He isn't a big role player. But they are very, very big when it comes to oil reserves and the production of oil. And I think in that sense, it may provide a huge advantage to the BRICS group, because we know that Russia is also very strong on crude oil and the production of gas and all these things. And I think in that sense, they will be in a very strong position. On the other side, this tendency may be a very dangerous one, because Shafat, what is clear from the war in the Ukraine and Russia is that the financial and economic power of the world is not completely in the East. It is still in the West. We can argue that it is in the process of shifting towards the East. But what is interesting to me is how low-key China played in this war between the Ukraine and the Russians, clearly seeing the interest with the West and so on. So it's a huge economic conflict, but it will be to the advantage of the so-called BRICS group. And
yeah, absolutely, Prof. Also, you know, I'm also looking at the story of U.S. President Joe Biden has invited Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula, the silver, to visit the White House, which may take place soon. But it's quite amazing that he's invited Lula. I thought maybe, you know, he wasn't that warm towards him. What's the reason for Biden calling Lula, Prof. from Brazil?
Well, two things. I think the Lula Silva is more to the left of the political spectrum. And we know that Biden has this open, more progressive approach towards, let's say, the third world. We have seen initiatives with regard to Africa. We have seen President Ramaphosa also going to the United States of America. It is clear to me that the United States of America is aligning with strategic allies. And Brazil, without any doubt, is one of the leading countries, not only in Southern America, but in the whole central part of Africa. Probably in the bigger American context, they may be the second biggest outside of the United States of America. And I think they are a very important role player. I think Brazil is also connected to the BRICS countries. And in that sense, it's a way of promoting your foreign interest, especially when it comes to battle against the Russians, what is going on in the Ukraine, but what is also what is going on in other places like the Middle East and so on. So, yes, Biden is rebuilding American relations throughout the world after the Trump era.
You know, Prof, we're living in a very funny world. I'm just looking at a story. It says a 10-year-old boy from Wisconsin in the United States shot his mother in the face after she refused to buy him a virtual reality headset. The child, who appeared remorseless at what he had done, used his mother's Amazon account to purchase the gaming set the next day. I mean, what are we producing, Prof? What type of world is this? Are we talking about artificial intelligence? This child is acting, a 10-year-old child, like an addict. When he doesn't get his fix, they'll do anything, even, you know, put their mother away. Talk to us, Prof.
Well, Shafat, all that we can say is the world is fundamentally different from what it was 20, 30, 40 years ago when I was a child. And what we are looking at, I think, in this information world, in this world of technology, is a lot of changes on so many levels. But the problem is that the value sets that should support these changes are not in place. That's the one thing. The other thing is that we have a huge problem with discipline throughout the world. And I think that is probably a problem in the total education systems of at least Western countries. where there's no clear rules. You know, in certain parts, I think it is Canada, you cannot bring your child to school as a son or a daughter. They need to decide for themselves if they are male or female. Now, Shafak, how can you give that type of decisions to a child when a child are 5, 6 years old on that level? So I think we are empowering children to the point where they cannot manage and handle it, and that is part of the problem. What we are missing is discipline from the house and sound discipline. And yesterday or the day before, we talked about the Shambok. Maybe we need to use that a bit more, no, not in the negative sense of the word, but in a way that you can discipline a child to the extent that is discipline, that they respect laws, that they respect others, and taking that forward from that. And maybe in a way, it has also to do with the decline of religion and the secularization of the world we are living in, which I am picking up on so many levels, not only in Western countries. I'm also picking this tendency up even in countries that are Muslim-orientated. This tendency are spreading. And in South Africa, we know it is very prominent, so also in parts of the United States of America.
Yeah, Prof, I'm sure you've been watching the World Cup in Qatar and this happened and that happened. But, Prof, ending off, you know, you talk about a 10-year-old, killing his mother, you know, with no emotions, nothing. And also, Prof, a reason here in this country we see that maybe in Africa also we have ethical leadership has become a rare commodity in South Africa and maybe in the rest of Africa, maybe the rest of the world. Why are we missing this ethical leadership, Prof?
Well, Shafak, I think we don't allow people to become the leaders that are supposed to be in leadership positions. That is the one thing. The system are disqualifying certain people. And just to apply that to the ESCOM scenario, we are disqualifying people with knowledge and skills to be in positions to really change the environment. It has a lot to do with top-down social engineering, empowering people in a way they misuse their positions. And to the extreme, we have seen that in African countries and particularly here in South Africa. And that is a very unfortunate situation. That is why I am saying, in a way, we cannot afford this anymore. And it has a lot to do with ethics, morality, about clear vision, about the future. And I'm afraid of my experiences that this is completely absent, at least in our immediate world, but probably on a larger scale as well. I think this is an outcome of an environment of major changes and dynamics, and without a strategic perspective where all of this will end off. And that is why we have all these conspiracy theories at the moment about the future, who is manipulating who and what, and all of these things, just listening to an article in this regard about the manipulation of Klaus Schwab and these people, how the Illuminatis are working. But at the end of the day, people find it difficult to just manage change and the challenges related to change.
Tell me, absolutely brilliant, Prof, to having you this morning. Perhaps your parting words before we let you go.
I think a lot will happen even before Christmas in South African politics. We need to look at what was going on and look at the environment, take our decisions, and be true to ourselves, our value systems, and act accordingly and set a standard to other people that is difficult to match. I think that is the way forward.
Thank you very much, Prof. You have a beautiful, lovely day ahead. We'll talk to you soon, Prof.
Thank you, sir.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.